You're listening to The Space Show on 88.3 Southern FM. Now, you may have heard about the space shuttle and how it's going to be ending its lifetime. Well, we have some good news, and joining us to share it with you is Kate Doolan. Kate is an author of a book called Fallen Astronauts. She's also written numerous articles on space, and she hails from a local area called Chelsea. So, good evening, Kate. Welcome to the Space Show.
Good evening, Andrew. Good to be here.
Now, Kate, I'll let you do the announcement. What was it that NASA announced a few days ago?
Well, it wasn't so much NASA as pressure from the US House of Representatives and the Senate. They basically demanded that NASA add a third space shuttle flight. We all thought that there were only two flights to go. Now there's three flights to go. This one will be Atlantis and it's scheduled for launch on the 28th of June 2011.
Let's get this quite clear. There were going to be just two more.
Yes.
After they've already flown three this year.
Yes.
And there were going to be two last ones, which were going to take place this year, weren't they?
One's going to take place in November and the next one's going to take place in February.
Yes, but originally they were planned to take place this year.
This year. One was supposed to take place next month and one was supposed to take place in December.
And so that's been changed?
That's been changed.
Okay, well, we'll discuss the reasons for that as we go on, but we're going to actually wind the clock back a little bit because myself and Peter Owood were at the Kennedy Space Center, myself during April and Peter during May, and this question came up time and time again. Now, we're going to go back to March the 9th to a press briefing, which was an overview of the space shuttle program as it existed in March. And there was a question on the extension of the shuttle, and this question was directed to John Shannon, who's the manager of the space shuttle program.
Question for both of you as well. I'll start with John, if that's all right. Last week, Senator Hutchison said she was going to file a bill to extend the life of the shuttle until a commercial alternative or a NASA alternative was available to take astronauts to orbit. Given the status of the shuttle's parts and supply chains and the workforce, I just wondered what kind of posture you would be in if they came to you sometime this summer and said, we don't want you to stop flying in September. We want you to continue flying for several more years.
We have been doing shuttle extension studies since I took over this job, and we continually update that information. There's a big misconception out there, I think, and that's on the shuttle supply chain, and that, you know, they're all out of business because we're ending the program, and you know, to get them back would be this enormous effort. It is not like there are small companies or small businesses out there that made, you know, shuttle widget number 5, and now that we're not flying the shuttle anymore, they're out of business and they've gone on to retirement in Florida, and we'll never hear from them again. For the most part, our suppliers and vendors are major companies in the aerospace field, maybe in all kinds of other fields. Take, for example, the orange foam that is robotically sprayed on the external tanks. That is produced by a company called North Carolina Foam Industries. They're a huge player in commercial and retail insulation. They do medical things. The shuttle program is a very small part of their business. And because the shuttle is going out of business does not mean that those companies are gone. And we kicked off last week when we were asked again about a shuttle extension, a study for each of the program elements to go out and physically touch base with each of the vendors and the sub-vendors and the entire supply chain and understand where we might have some issues if we were to restart the program. I get those results on Thursday, and we'll formally write that up and submit it to headquarters. But there's this misconception that there's all this big supply chain that was shuttle specific only. Shuttle is for the most part a sideline business for these major companies that support the actual program. So we will assemble that and send that forward. The other piece that has been of interest is the recertification issues with the orbiter. The Columbia Accident Investigation Board recommended if we flew past 2010 that we do a recertification of the orbiter vehicles. That has been ongoing since 2005, and We did a very comprehensive assessment, first of all, of our what we call CRIP 1 parts, things that if they fail, they could cause a loss of the crew or vehicle, to make sure that when we're doing our testing on the ground or our environment in flight is encompassed by the original certification of that part. And in some areas, we found out that we had some deficiencies where we thought that the way we were operating on the ground or in flight was within that certification, but we did not have test data to show that that was true. So we went off and ran a lot of tests, or we put additional inspections in. And we have since expanded that, not just from the CRIP 1 hardware, but now to the CRIP, what we call 1 requires 2 failure things, where if the first one fails, you can still accomplish your mission, but if the second one fails, you could lose the vehicle. So we expanded the certification review to those parts. Now we're doing the CRIT 1 R3, the things that require 3 failures to do. We've also done the CRIT 2 stuff, things where you lose a piece of the mission, but you don't lose the vehicle or crew. And CRIT 3, things like cameras and bags. So we've pretty much over the last 5 years gone through the entire orbiter vehicle to make sure that we're operating within the environment that the different orbiter pieces were originally certified for. So we feel like we've addressed recertification. We did not stop there. We continued and had meetings with aging vehicle experts to understand from an aviation standpoint what types of things do they typically find, what types of things do they look at. We benchmarked things like the B-52 bomber, things that have been flying for greater than 50 years. And as a result of those meetings with those aging vehicle experts, we added 23 additional inspection points into each of the orbiters that we hit every time we turn the vehicle around. So we've addressed the orbiter recertification issues. We are addressing the supply line issues. I don't expect to find any problems there. The real issue we would have would be just in manufacturing. While you have a supply chain, while you can get a workforce back to go and build things like external tanks, there would be some type of a gap. And right now, we estimate that gap would be about 2 years from when we're told to when we would have the first external tank rolling off the assembly line. And you could address that through many different ways, by slowing down the shuttle program until that 2 years was up, or you just accept that gap and do other things. I think the real issue that the agency and the nation has to address is the expense. The shuttle program is fairly expensive. We burn at about a $200 million a month rate. And so that's gives you a base of about $2.4 billion per year that it would require to continue flying the shuttle, almost irregardless of how many flights you flew during the year. I'm flying 5 flights this year at about that much money. If I flew 2 flights, it might be a little bit less, but not a significant amount less. There's just a base cost there that you have to pay to keep the program in business. And where that money comes from is the big question. So that's what we're working on.
So if I understand that correctly, you have largely gone through the 2010 certification issue, and you're in a reasonably flexible posture to address these requests if they come up?
Yes. Now, part of the bill that I read, we've had discussions with outside independent teams, is whether what the John Shannon view of recertification is meets the Admiral Gaiman view of recertification. And I think it does. We're ready to make that, to have that discussion if required. And press on. I'm extremely proud of the team that has done this recertification effort. They've looked at it very, very, very closely, and I think they've made the right decisions to make sure that we make sure that we're flying as safely as we possibly can be. And I, you know, all of that attention to detail and making sure that we're operating on the ground and on orbit within your certification, I think that just leads into some of the reason why we've had the success we've had over the last 2 years, with very few anomalies and very few problems with the vehicles.
And that was John Shannon, the manager of the Space Shuttle Program, and he's speaking at the Johnson Space Center at a briefing for the press, speaking on March the 9th this year. As we hear, as we shall hear during our program tonight, that view has changed and is changing still. Now, Kate, could you please explain to us something we're going to need to know for the next part of this press conference? John Shannon uses the term launch on need. What does that mean?
Launch on need is having an extra shuttle on the pad in case something goes wrong with the shuttle on the way to the International Space Station. As you recall, during the Hubble servicing mission last year, they had two space shuttles on the pad at once, just in case something went wrong with one space shuttle. The second one was on the pad and ready to go, literally within a 48-hour period to bring the crew home. But in most cases, since the Columbia accident, they do have a second space shuttle on standby in case something does go wrong with the space shuttle that's flying. And with this one here, the Atlantis will be serving as the launch on need orbiter for the Endeavour flight in February. And they don't want to waste the capabilities of that, so they're going to use that for the final mission.
Okay. Now, during this, we're going to go back to this press conference in a moment, but in speaking, John Shannon is going to refer to something called MPLM. What's that, Kate?
That's the Multipurpose Logistics Module. That's mounted in the payload bay of the space shuttle, and it's used to carry experiments and any additions that they want to add to the International Space Station. It will be the last opportunity to take up anything that can't fit into a Progress spacecraft or the European ATV spacecraft.
Okay, well, we'll go back to this press conference at the Johnson Space Center.
Hi, this is James Dean from Florida Today. Mr. Shannon, setting aside the possibility of a longer-term shuttle extension, just wondered if you could tell us about the likelihood of and your comfort level in potentially adding an STS-135, which Senator Nelson is telling us that his committee is going to ask NASA to fly, assuming, of course, that it wouldn't be needed as a launch-on-need vehicle and that you have the funding for it.
Okay. Just to keep everybody on the same page, our current last planned flight is STS-133, but we like to have a launch-on-need rescue vehicle for every shuttle that we launch. So we have STS-335. We've procured the boosters. We have the external tank. We'll process Atlantis just like for a real flight. And, James, the mindset of the team is that 335 is a real flight. You have to process it that way to make sure that everything is together, everything is ready to go if you needed it for a launch-on-need. There's a discussion going on a little bit. So that's the shuttle program perspective. There's a discussion going on outside the shuttle program of you have a tank, you have boosters, you have an orbiter processed. We have a multi-purpose logistics module that can be filled up for additional logistics up to the station. Why in the world wouldn't you go launch that? And some of the problems with that are now you don't have a launch on need for that vehicle. So we're working through different thoughts on that as to do you require launch on need vehicles? Have we already mitigated the issues that we originally had launch on need for? Could you end up doing rescues through the Soyuz? I'm sure you've heard all this. A lot of it, I think, will depend on where the shuttle program finishes. If we are done in September, I think the ability to go do that from a budgetary standpoint is going to be very good. If we end up delaying and going out through December and we would have to ask for new money to go and fly that flight, I think the chances go down. So from a shuttle program standpoint, it makes no difference to us right now. Our mindset is that is a mission we need to be prepared to go fly. If the nation decides that they would like to spend the money to go and fly it, then we certainly will be in a position to do that. We don't need to know right now. We would need to know by probably about the June time frame to make sure we had the right training in place, and we can decide then.
Thanks. As a follow-up to that, you mentioned the MPLM, and I'm wondering if would that be after another MPLM after Leonardo would have already been left up on the station, and would you consider adding leaving another MPLM up there as well if you had an extra flight?
So yes, it would be a different MPLM. We're actually converting one of the MPLMs to a, we call it a PMM, a permanent module, which we're adding some additional shielding on it. That'll occur after, actually right after this 19A returns home. We'll start into that work. But our intention would not be to leave. If we flew 135, we would not leave that MPLM on orbit permanently. Basically, we're full on our ports. We like to keep ports available to support cargo vehicles coming up and being able to berth those and have backup capability. So we wouldn't plan on using up one of those ports to keep a second MPLM permanently on orbit.
On the space show this evening here on 88.3 Southern FM, we are tracking the towards the decision to fly an extra shuttle, and we're trying to see why. Now, at the time that this press conference happened in March, it was quite certain that there would not be one, but you can see they're sort of starting to think about what would they need to do, and the press was on it all the time. We're going to go back to that now, but this time we'll hear from Kurt Scheiermann, who is the deputy manager of the International Space Station. And the background to this is a decision had been made just before that by President Obama to extend the space station program out till 2020. Before that, it had been planned to end at around about 2015, but they gave it a five-year extension of life. And that's the background to this question.
Todd Halverson of Florida Today. Actually, we have a couple. My question is for Kurt Scheiermann. You know, in May, you finally expanded the crew size to 6 on International Space Station, and now there's talk about a proposed extension until 2020 of International Space Station operations. And given the talk about a possible extension for the shuttle, do you think that it is a good time to reconsider whether to extend shuttle, given the fact that it appears station is going to be operating now for an additional 5 years till 2020, and your desire for actually full utilization of the station?
That's, you know, the decision to consider extension is certainly one the nation's talking about right now. The things that ISS needs to fully utilize are upmass and downmass, and the shuttle provides that. In addition to a crew of 6 or 7, and having additional subjects not only to perform experiments, but as you know, in a lot of cases the crew members are the experiments. So additional people to perform experiments and to gather data on would be great. So absolutely, if the shuttle was extended, the ISS would be very pleased to have it to help. Help get the most out of ISS, and we're ready to support whatever the country decides.
Kate, we're with Kate Doolin, who's an author, lives here in our broadcast area. And Kate, could you tell us how many people normally fly on the space shuttle?
Normally between 5 and 7, and in the case of STS 135, there'll be 4 people flying on the shuttle for safety reasons. 4 people, so they can be easily rescued by the Soyuz spacecraft that's attached to the space station.
Okay, we're going to go back to this press conference at the Johnson Space Center, and the respondent this time will be John Shannon.
For John, on 135, should it become a reality, is launching that with a crew of 4, is that what you meant when you were talking about using Soyuz as crew rescue? You could do it with 4 people and you don't have to have a rescue vehicle.
Yeah, the baseline for a launch on need mission is 4 crew members. And I don't think we would, the mission does not sound like it would be complex enough to require more than 4 crew members. And that might align with a potential Soyuz launch on need. We have a lot to work out if that was decided. But I don't think we would move beyond 4 crew members.
Yeah. And now on the space show, we switch the scene over to the Kennedy Space Center, where I was in April. And while I was there, Robert Cabana gave a press conference. Now, Robert Cabana is a veteran of several space shuttle missions, and he's now the director of the Kennedy Space Center. And he was outlining the new role that would be taken by the Kennedy Space Center in the wake of President Obama's momentous decisions. So I got to ask him a question about these extra shuttle missions. Andrew Rennie, Southern FM Australia again. At the STS-131 press conferences, there is a lot of media fishing, would be the best word for it, questions about would there be any more shuttle flights beyond the 3.5 that are currently scheduled. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I know we got at least 3 more, and we got to get this one that's up there home safely and continue on with the next. We'll see. You know, there's a possibility of, you know, if we had to or wanted to or could fly a launch on need vehicle, but there's still, you know, I know we're going to execute the 3 that we got, and we'll see how things play out beyond that. I'll share one final thought with y'all. I mean, first off, again, I'm really pleased with what KSC has been entrusted with. I think it says a lot to trust us with a brand new program for this commercial crew venture that we're going to work toward to get astronauts to low Earth orbit, and we're going to make it successful. I got an email from one of my friends, Ken Bowersox, I've known for a long time, as he saw the it come out, and he says, so Bob, what's the story? KSC getting the commercial crew program down there. Are you trying to get another space flight out of this? And, you know, I only wish. But I did tell him that, you know, it's the right place for it. I think the team here, given the experience that we have with the launch services program, the experience we have with the shuttle program, it's an ideal mix to blend those two together to get to the right answer for what commercial crew is going to be. And this team can make it work. We can integrate it and make it possible. So I'm really looking forward to the future. I think we got a lot of work to do, but I'm confident that we're up to it. I appreciate your all support and coming out today, and look forward to talking with you again as we get a little more detail on all this and continue to work toward the future.
I was at the Kennedy Space Center when the space shuttle STS-131, which was flown by the orbiter Discovery, landed. And a few hours after the landing, there was a press conference, and I asked Pete. Someone else asked Pete Nikolenko, who was the launch director for STS-131, about this issue. Is Atlantis the definitive last mission?
Hi, Robert Perlman with CollectSpace.com and Space.com for Mike Moses. Not to rush past this mission, but looking forward, since you do have the rollout of Atlantis tonight, when we write our articles, it's scheduled to be the last mission of Atlantis, but can we say it's the definitively last rollout of Atlantis, barring an emergency on STS-133? What does the manifest look like going out from here?
Yeah, the manifest hasn't changed. That's still STS-132 is the last flight of Atlantis. It will be readied as a rescue vehicle if needed. There's been a lot of talk from the administration politically about whether you go ahead and fly that rescue vehicle since you have the hardware here in stack, but there's been no decision made there, and from a planning purpose standpoint, we're still planning on 132 being the last flight of Atlantis.
And a quick follow-up, if I may. You mentioned getting ready for Discovery's next mission in the fall. How confident are you about flying out these last 3 missions before the end of the year?
Let's see, you know, from an orbiter standpoint, shuttle integrated stack standpoint, we're in really good shape. The vehicles processing have been going fantastically. The tanks are on schedule. The RSRB hardware is here and ready to be stacked. And so from that standpoint, really confident in the schedule for those vehicles. From a payload standpoint, you know, it's not just about the launch vehicle. You have to look at the payload readiness. We just brought the MPLM back on this mission. The multipurpose logistics module. It's going to be taken out of the payload bay, sent down to the station processing facility, where it'll be outfitted and become the PMM, the permanent logistics module, that'll fly up on STS-133. So that takes some time to do. We delayed their launch a little bit. We added another day to the mission. We added another day here with the weather delay. All that impacts them. They had a pretty tight schedule to begin with. And so now that they get it back home, we're going to go take a serious look at that schedule and see how it holds for the launch in September of STS-133. But it's in the ballpark, and it's going to fit. It just might need another week or so to get ready. They might be able to find that wiggle room in their schedule, too. I haven't looked, and we haven't pushed them too hard since we hadn't yet got Discovery back on the ground. On the other side, STS-134 flying the AMS payload, it also has some delivery challenges. They had a big meeting this week over in, or actually it was the end of last week, over in Europe to talk about that payload from a science perspective. And as a technical decision, they kind of came forward with the recommendation that they'd like to switch out from their cryo magnet to a permanent magnet, given that the ISS lifetime has been extended. The permanent magnet gives them a much longer science mission than the cryo magnet. From a thermal challenge standpoint, I think they'll get a lot better science out of this other magnet. So the details of why they decided to switch aside, in that switch they've came forward and asked us to go look at evaluating a potential delay to that mission and what we could accommodate in the schedule. So we're off looking at the potentials, impacts to the manifest for a late delivery of the AMS payload, what we could do, but we're still looking to finish out this calendar year at the end of 2010.
We're talking about the space shuttle, and it's sort of the end game for the space shuttle. Now, Kate, we heard there that they were still planning at that time, and that was back in April, that to still fly all the missions this year. Now, what happened to, talking there about doing delays, those delays came to fruition. What exactly happened, do you know, Kate?
Delays with payloads, just general delays with payload and general delays with shuttle processing. And with the, they also decided to extend it into next year with the addition of the third flight.
They got STS-132 away pretty much on time, though, didn't they, Kate?
They did, which is very. You were quite lucky when you went to the Kennedy Space Center to see a launch, because so few space shuttle flights get off on time. And usually there's weather holds or there's technical problems that delay the flight. So it's always a bit of a game of Russian roulette if they are going to launch on time. So the launch dates, while they're set, they always can change at the last moment. And the next launch, 133, is down for November the 1st. STS-134, which was ostensibly the last mission, but it's now the second last mission, is down for the 26th of February 2011. And the final mission, Touchwood, is the 28th of June.
Okay, Kate. Peter Arwood, the space show's very own Peter Arwood, was there for the launch of STS-132, and this was on May the 14th, and he attended the press conference just after the launch, at which a number of people were asked questions about this issue of whether Atlantis would fly again, and amongst the people replying were Bill Gerstenmaier, who is the Associate Administrator for Space Operations at NASA, and Mike Moses, who's the chairman of the pre-launch mission management team, and here's their response to a question.
Jay Barbary with NBC. Mike, the other day before the Commerce Committee, your administrator said that he had not ruled out flying Atlantis again for another mission. He was still considering it. The problem was safety between liftoff and getting into orbit. You'd have no vehicle to go get them before they get to the space station. What would it take for you guys to get Atlantis ready to go to follow Endeavour into space? You'll have it ready for, of course, a rescue. But what would you have to do to have it ready? What more would you have to do to have it ready to go? And would you be confident, you both mics, would you be confident after today in sending up a crew on Atlantis again without a backup shuttle to pick it up?
You want to talk about the processing part?
Well, see, a lot of questions there, and that's typical from Mr. Barber. But from the processing perspective, you know, we're going to process Atlantis like we always do, because it does have to be ready for the launch on need mission, so it has to be ready to go with a crew of four. And then if it happens to turn into a mission to the space station by itself, so be it. We would do what's necessary there. We're not going to shortcut anything. We're not planning on adding anything to the turnaround. We're going to process it for the LON, and if things change, we will react to that. It's no big deal to us right now, early in the processing after she gets home, whether it's an LON mission or whether it's a mission to the space station.
So in other words, it'd be ready to go after you fly Endeavour, pretty much standing there as the rescue vehicle.
Yeah, the way the timeline would work is like you see on all of our safe haven rescue missions, the exact time depends on the station consumables, but it would be somewhere in the 90 to 120 day range that we'd have protection to be able to keep the crew up on station. For the last flight, we actually probably can go even longer than that. So Atlantis would be processed to the point where it's at least that close to launch, so that you know you can launch and then successfully rescue.
And if we were going to make it a real mission, we would probably want to know in June so we could actually start doing the right planning, get things in place, make sure we got the right cargo in place. We've got a good set of cargo. We got a good understanding of where we want to go. But if we want to make it a real mission, we need to get focused on the real mission. We need to think about what unique aspects need to be there and be prepared. So the June time frame is about the time that we kind of need to get an idea that that's somebody would like us to go do that, and if they provide the funding, we'd be glad to go do that.
So you're working that now, and you're working that now in headquarters. You're working the mission now, and you're trying to.
We're really doing exactly what these guys said. We're preparing it for a contingency flight, but we're prepared that if somebody asks us to make it a real flight, we can start that activity if they let us know by sometime in the June, July time frame.
I owe you one, Mike.
Gentlemen, Greg Dobbs from HDNet Television. And don't forget, it's Mr. Krasnov who brought this up, not Jay. So a second question about the latest thinking on an additional flight. What would be the nature, what's the latest thinking at least, about the nature of the cargo and the size of a crew on a fourth flight?
It would be a four-person crew, would have the MPLM, would be configured pretty much in the configuration we have for the launch on need flight.
What would it carry?
An MPLM. Multi-purpose logistic module.
Right.
It would carry spare components for the space station. We've already laid that manifest out for the contingency flight, what consumables we need, what spares, what ORUs we would want. Also, importantly, we could bring back some items for us, which we'd like at the last moment to bring back. We'd like to fly it in the June kind of time frame next year, if possible. The reason we want to do that, we have an HTV and an ATV flight that are going to fly in December and January. We have a lot of supplies on those flights. We want to then put it in the right place to benefit station. So our motivation technically would be it gives us the best way to leave station in the best configuration we can as we move forward. Station would be fine without the flight, but if we want to try to improve it and make things better, then if somebody wants us to go do it, we could go potentially accommodate the flight.
Bobby?
Bobby Block with the Orlando Sentinel. I wanted to ask you guys if you could talk about the emotions that you had seeing the launch, knowing that this could be Atlantis's final launch. But before I get to that, I just wanted to follow on something with Bill. How much money, you said you'd need money to do the launch. Do you have any idea of what, because you have some additional funding, I think, to the end of the year. Do you have an idea of what you would need to be able to launch Atlantis next June if you were asked to?
We've done some estimates, and we're covered through the end of the calendar year, and then beyond that, it depends exactly when the flight sits. So I think I'd rather not give you a specific number, but you can, you know, roughly think we're on the order of about $100 million a month or so for each month. We're beyond the beginning of the calendar year. But we're still working those details. So it's probably, you know, again, $600 to maybe $1 billion to fly in a June kind of time.
And that was a press conference following the launch of STS-132, and that was brought back for us by Pete Irwood, one of our space show presenters. We're going to go to a public service announcement, and then we're going to come back with Kate Doolan.
Most people assume that blood donations are mostly used in trauma cases. In fact, only 10% of all blood supply is used in this way, according to the Australian Red Cross Blood Service Victoria. About 30% of blood collected is used to treat general medical conditions, such as leukemia and renal disease, and to help patients cope with chemotherapy. 20% treat thalassemia and other anemias, and 70% is used in general surgery. Orthopedics use another 13%, and the remaining 10% goes to cardiovascular surgery, such as heart bypasses. Help contribute to the state's much-needed blood supply and become a blood donor. For more information about donating blood, call 131495.
On the space show, we are discussing the additional mission that's been added. We've been tracking through some of the statements made by NASA officials at various press conferences. And we're now joined again by Kate Doolan. She's a noted author of a number of publications, including Fallen Astronauts, a book about the astronauts who have died. Welcome back to the show, Kate.
Thank you.
Now, as we've just said, we've heard a few of the thoughts they had before they decided. What pushed the decision to finally approve this extra flight of Atlantis?
Strictly politics. Senators and representatives from the main space states of Florida, Texas, and Alabama were pressuring NASA to do an extra flight long before they had planned to do another flight. It might be the cynic in me, but it is an election year.
And there were concerns about the massive job loss which will occur when the space shuttle program closes down, and possibly the politicians involved didn't want to lose their own jobs before the during the November election, so they used their influence to fund another space shuttle flight. It wasn't NASA's idea, it was strictly an idea of Congress, and it was passed in late August.
I noticed that when I was there, President Obama was forced to go to the Kennedy Space Center to allay the fears and to shore up the votes, because Florida is a key to winning the election, isn't it?
Yes, Florida is a very important election state, as we all learnt in the 2000 election, and you win Florida and you usually win the White House, and the space industry provides a great number of jobs in Florida, and there's also the long history of what happened to the downgrading in Florida after the Apollo program ended. Literally hundreds of thousands of jobs went, and skilled engineers were reduced to selling cars, working in clerical jobs just to get by, because there was nothing left for them to do after the Apollo program ended.
How many astronauts are there actually on the payroll at NASA?
Usually between 80 and 120, and I expect now that some of the long-term astronauts have begun to resign, and I expect between now and the end of next year there will be a great rush out the door for the astronauts to resign, because there's only going to be four positions on the final flights, and 80 astronauts can't fill four positions. So
I was just going to say that there must be a bit of a lolly scramble on at the moment then to get your name on that.
Get your name on that list, and I expect that the astronauts that will be named on the list will be recent space station inhabitants and astronauts who have flown recent space shuttle flights. I don't expect there'll be any rookie astronauts, and I don't expect NASA will be recruiting astronauts for some years now.
Well, thanks for joining us on the Space Show, Kate.
Thank you, my pleasure.